Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday, Game Week Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well here on this Monday. Did we tell you last week it's going to get a little warmer? It is. And it's going to keep getting warmer all the way through this week. Be ready for a hot Saturday night at Jordan-Hare Stadium, a hot Friday night for Auburn High and Lee Scott football. But we've got a lot to talk to you about, with you about here on this Monday edition of The Drive. It's Bill and Dan here in the studio. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com will be joining us shortly. He's running a little late, but he will be in as well. And we'll talk. We can talk a little bit about the Week Zero game, some interesting games. A little more of content. A couple of ball games. Much different than I think many people had expected in the Week Zero games.
I mean, for all the analysis we provide all offseason long, I think what you got this weekend in Georgia Tech, Florida State was an example. You know, it was a reminder that this thing is extremely hard to predict with all the movement that you see in the offseason and all of the new, even really good teams. Florida State was 13-0 ACC champion last year, and with all the things that are different there, you know, there were big question marks, and Georgia Tech was able to exploit them into a pretty shocking upset victory in Dublin, Ireland.
And yes, it was not it sure didn't look like a fluke. Georgia Tech was very physical. I mean, that was a fun ball game to watch. Brent Keyes got this Georgia Tech team, playing much better than we've seen defensively. They haven't looked like this in a long time, and Haynes King looks like a nice addition there at quarterback for the Yellow Jackets.
Well, and Haynes King, I believe, was quarterback last year for
right,
Georgia Tech.
I mean,
but it looks like a nice pickup. You're right.
Maybe Auburn people can say he looks like he's got a little more around him than he did a year ago. I think defensively, though, is where Tech is just miles ahead of where they were.
Think about that, though, Bill, that a guy who joined Georgia Tech last year is better in year two.
Yeah.
And more in control. And a guy who was pretty good for Oregon State last year in DJ Uiagalelei joins Florida State in the offseason, and I didn't think it seemed like a totally harmonious addition to the Florida State offense.
He looked like a guy that is still learning what Mike Norvell wants him to do, if he can do it.
Even though he's played a ton of college football at the major conference level, and he's succeeded for much of his career, it was a really tough adjustment for DJ, especially in the second half. You know, when Georgia Tech felt like that defense had adjusted and started to sort of dare DJ to beat them with precision, and he couldn't do it. Maybe he will be able to as the Noles get some kinks worked out, but
they better get them worked out pretty quickly.
That's right.
That fan base is not thrilled with this start. They expected a triumphant return from Dublin, and it's anything but.
How about this, Bill? I don't think you can make the playoff as a 10-2 at large from the ACC.
No, I don't either.
I don't think a 10-2 at large from the ACC is going to make the playoffs. 10-2 ACC champion could very well be in the college football playoff, but I think Florida State is another loss away from needing to win the ACC to win. Now, if Florida State wins out and their next loss is in the ACC championship game, as an 11-2
probably
as an 11-2 ACC runner up,
top 12.
I would think you would have an excellent shot at an at large.
But they better not lose between now and then.
I agree. I mean, if they lose between now and then
they've got to win the conference championship.
Then they would need to win the ACC championship. And for concern about the regular season being made less meaningful with an expanded college football playoff, I agree there's probably a number where if this gets into, well, they can lose four. But that fifth loss is really going to put them on the that fifth loss is really going to put them on the bubble of the college football playoff. Then we've probably gone too far. But I'm okay talking about a team and saying, you know what, they have a little bit, because it probably used to be that a loss like that takes you out completely, right? When we were taking the top two, Florida State would have needed to win out in convincing fashion to play their way back into BCS. Champion, you know what I mean? Like back when it was a two-team college football. I don't know if a team ever, I'm curious, Drew, if a team ever lost the opener in the BCS era and then won out after that and won the championship. If an 0-1 team ever bounced back.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be pretty rare if it ever happened. It's certainly more plausible in an era of 12 or 14 team, you know what I mean, in an expanded college football era with more at-larges in the picture. But Florida State doesn't have too much room for error after dropping an opener, and there was a lot of this could deflect back to us, and I'm glad Brian's walking in on this, Bill, where I was chatting with a couple people on the beat yesterday, and they mentioned that one of the one of the common refrains from Florida State fans was, all off season we heard from people who cover the team how great this team is, and now they've lost their opener it does make me feel kind of good about I think we've talked about this Auburn team in a way where there are reasons to feel good, but there are also There are also absolutely question marks that could become talking points down the line. And Hugh Freeze, first question he takes today is about the evolving situation at left tackle, right? Which was, I know, something that you talked about with Doug as well as, sort of.
It is the, right now, it's the talking point as far as questions about this team. Until we watch them Saturday, I'm sure there'll be some other things that people will want to discuss. But right now, the biggest question is, who's the left tackle? Will it be Percy Lewis? Will it be Tyler Johnson? Will it be Dylan Wade? And that's exactly what Hugh Freeze said today, that I expect to see all three of them out there at the left tackle on Saturday.
And maybe
not at the same time.
Well, they're going to be
not going to be like defense with 37 different players or 37, 38 different players listed.
This might be the greatest defense in the history of college football.
It's going to seem like they're 37 all starters. Over the place.
If they hadn't utilized the or, right? If they just told you those 37 are going to be out there, I think they would be in the running.
I wouldn't be surprised if DJ Durkin just listed those, didn't put the ors, and just the media relations people had to put the ors.
Yeah, it would be faster to tell you the scholarship defensive players that weren't on the depth chart.
You're probably right. What is it, about 12, 15?
Well, they've got 12 players on the defensive line. I would love to see a team try to run against that. Yeah. 12 players on the defensive line.
Yeah, especially while we've got 16 in the secondary.
Right, exactly.
Well, and there were Auburn teams.
Just triple team every receiver, right?
That's right.
There were Auburn teams in the past that didn't have double digit defensive linemen on scholarship.
You're right.
To have 12 guys vying for a starting role, on the interior, and Hugh Freeze, I thought, was pretty eloquent about that today too, talking about he's going to leave that up to DJ and Von Trell,
I really thought that's what he'd done. When I looked at the depth chart, I thought, okay, this is Ken Austin or Derek Nix's list of the depth chart offensively, and that is what DJ Durkin has been talking about all fall. He doesn't particularly want to talk, and I think it's great. He doesn't really want to talk about a player at a position. He wants to talk about all the players he thinks can help at any position.
It's telling, though. He's more comfortable talking about a player at a position when the player is Keldrick Falk or J-Mac. It's the interior spots,
right,
where there's certainly, but I would say it's the interior spots where there's an opportunity, And Brian, I'd love to know if you have a candidate or two for this role. I think there's an opportunity for, among all those unknowns, question marks, you know, different variables there on the defensive line, if there's a chance for one or two guys to break out and show, no, they need to be out there in crucial moments, and they probably need to play more than the other guys on that defensive line, even if it's still a rotation. It can be a rotation that skews towards a couple of guys, and I wonder after three or four games if we're going to have an idea of if there will be candidates for, oh yeah, that guy has looked like he needs to really be out there on the interior defensive. The way they talk about Keldrick and J-Mac right now as
right.
guys who...
But if you look back at DJ Durkin, he generally doesn't have anybody who plays from start to finish sure. without having some breaks. So I mean,
which is a good idea with when you're talking about guys of those proportions.
So you're not going to see Iron Man out there, but yes, I mean even Hugh Freeze when he was talking about offense, hey, it's going to come down to if the game's on the line, you better have your best guys out there, and that's a reason that you want to have that depth so that whenever you feel like, hey, it's time now, I've got to have my guys that they've been rested. So
okay, Brian, if an A team on the interior defensive line emerges,
yeah,
is there a player or two that you would guess you would think has a better shot than the others of being in that group of the A team?
Yeah, I would say Isaiah Rakes has stepped up during mm-hmm. fall camp and is going to be your number one nose tackle in my opinion, and he's listed number one up there. Although of course, like we said, there's a bunch of ors.
Yeah, but you know what? When you looked at that, I looked at my depth chart, and yeah. it was an amazing coincidence, I'm sure,
yeah.
that my depth chart almost matched their ors. It's like, gee, yep. my number one guy was listed first on the depth
exactly.
chart. My number two guy was listed as the second guy with the or.
Yeah, I think there's
Malik,
something you
it's
could
cool
take
to see
from
Malik Blockton,
yeah.
I thought, even it's two. Even though you've got or, Malik Blockton is right. listed second there.
Yep,
defensive tackle.
It's a puppy Phillip, with big paws,
yeah,
Malik Phillip Blockton.
Bleedy, the transfer, I think, had a really strong last
heard,
2 weeks.
Yeah, we've really heard a lot about yeah. him down the stretch.
So he's been good. And it's interesting the way they do the linebackers. They call the Willie linebacker the dime. Of course, they got the Mike and the Sam middle and strong side. And then they got the star, which is the nickel.
There's your nickel.
Right.
Yeah.
So a little bit different than I expected there. But
well, remember, that's what our defensive coordinator almost got the head coaching job.
Steele?
Yeah, that's what Kevin called. You know, he liked to call it the star.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
We've had a couple of defensive coordinators who almost or did become.
Yeah, I know, but I just met recently, and it's like I couldn't think of Kevin Steele's last name. It was Kevin, yeah.
I think that Rakes probably would have been my first guess as well, but with Blockton, I think it's so cool to see you know, when a young player, when a first-year guy is contributing in your front seven, in recent Auburn history, that's indicated that you have a special player on yeah. your hands. You think about, like, guys like Colby and Derek Hall,
yep.
Owen, Derek Brown, Marlon, yep. like those are the
those
kind
guys
of
guys played as true freshmen.
Yeah. yeah, all those guys were in there, you know, in there a lot as true freshmen. I don't know how much Malik Blockton's going to play.
No, he'll play a lot.
But it's one. I mean, but to hear you say he's going to play a lot makes me think, man, that's a really exciting true freshman on the defensive line, because those are big, impressive dudes he's competing with for snaps.
Yeah, Amaris Williams is going to play a lot of defensive end too. I don't have any question about that. We're going to see a lot of DeMarcus Riddick. At
right.
linebacker and on special teams.
I think you'll see
sure.
a ton of him on special teams.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we'll probably see a lot of J.C. Hart, who's a redshirt freshman at cornerback. Jay Crawford, who's a true freshman at cornerback.
Are you going to see Kite and Damon Lane, too?
I mean, Caleb Harris was
yeah, how about him?
Yeah,
listed.
Number two.
That was
yeah.
one thing I
was a little bit confused. I had
Sylvester Smith over there with Caleb.
Too. I did, too.
Caleb Wooden yeah. and Caleb Harris on the other side. But that's one thing Hugh said is one of the things they're still trying to determine is the safeties.
Yeah.
Exactly who's you know who goes where.
I'd imagine a guy like Jaron could play either position very comfortably and
right.
know it. I mean, he is the leader back there. He makes the calls. He's a really experienced player, over 30 major college starts for him. So that was a really important pickup.
We all got some questions up to Coach Freeze today at the press conference, and I don't really know what I was expecting when I asked about the running back plan. I'm curious to know what you guys.
That was a quick. I love the answer.
I did too, but it was it was brief, but it was you know what? But it was eloquent in its brevity. He said it was
give the question and then the response.
Well, yeah, so I mean, I just asked. We heard from Coach Nix last week, and he's extremely confident about his top options at running back: Jarquez Hunter, Damari Alston. He didn't really talk about Jeremiah Cobb last week, but he's talked about Jeremiah Cobb a lot in the offseason. And so I sort of thought, what's the plan to keep, to utilize all three of those guys. And Hugh Freeze said, "Bill, you want to jump
no,
in?
No, you go ahead.
Because Hugh Freeze said it's a great problem to have, and the plan is to keep him healthy and give him touches. Right? Long story short, he wants to, and then the great problem to have is trying to figure out ways to get all three mm-hmm. players like that touches. And I'm curious, what about you guys? Like, what do you think? How do you think they're gonna deploy?"
I think in game one, you're going to see Jarquez in the first quarter, maybe half of the second quarter, and then they're going to turn it over to Damari and to Jeremiah Cobb.
I think you'll also – I wouldn't be surprised to see Jeremiah sort of in there in the Ontario McCaleb type role, running a jet sweep. The other thing is that, Tanner Burns told us the other day, and it's right there on the depth chart, Jeremiah Cobb – is one of your two kickoff return guys. Yep. It's Jeremiah Cobb and Malcolm Simmons are your two deep men on kickoff return. So that is a great way to get them the ball. We have gone on and on with our intro here. We've got Bill hanging on. So I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and get to him before we get to our first break. I appreciate you hanging on there on the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. You've already touched on it, but I wanted to give a credit to Georgia Tech. Having grown up in Atlanta, I always kind of followed them before I went to Auburn back in the 70s. But that was a great game. I was really, really glad to see Brent Key get that win. And it was a good, that program's been down for a while. And they can build on what happened Saturday. I noticed we had a couple guys, Cam Riley with Florida State, and Romello Height had a good I thought he was a Southern Cal, but now he's at Tech.
Right. A lot of guys have left Southern Cal that have headed out there.
But Romello Height hadn't had – and it was a close call, but he did get it. If he hadn't had that face mask on that they had Florida State pinned back again. I can't remember the exact
but yeah, it was Romello Height and Cam Riley both mentioned by name in that game.
I don't think Cam Riley had a particularly good game.
No, he didn't.
But Romello Height put some pressure on the court. Yeah, he had with a fourth down play or a third and long, and they had him. He sacked him, but he got a piece of the face mask and gave him a first down, which they ended up scoring on. But
you're talking to a room full of guys that liked Romello Height at different points. I remember that was that there was a practice where he was trending at one point to play very early in his Auburn career, and things didn't work out at Auburn, but he's grown into an effective football player for sure.
And I missed a little bit of the first of the show. What exactly seems to be the is somebody not picking the scheme up, or what seems to be the problem at that tackle spot?
Oh, I think the number one problem is Keyron Crawford and Jalen McLeod.
I hope that's the case.
Having a really good fall camp. But I think it's the pass blocking. If you look at Percy Lewis, he's a very, very big man. And, you got to be pretty nimble. And he does have some nimbleness, too. I'm not saying he can't move. It's just you got to be pretty special to play left tackle in the SEC. And
it's interesting, though. I mean, supposedly last year he graded much better as a pass blocker than he did a run blocker.
Yeah.
Completely different offense.
I believe that the pass blocking criticism was was inconsistency. There'd be times when he was. It wasn't as though he was a. He plateaued as an above average. Yeah. He was giving you above average production by being great at times and significantly below average at times. And there was the belief. I remember when he was in the portal, there was the talk that that's somebody who, if he takes a step forward, could fit in as a starting tackle on a very good SEC team. The question is he taking that step forward? Has it happened yet? He's another guy like Tuttle who was playing junior college football pretty recently. Like, this is all still kind of new to Percy. So I think in the case it's a bit of a surprise this late in camp. I gotta wonder what happened in the practices and the scrimmages behind closed doors.
But he didn't grade out well enough.
I'm thinking, right. Like I would say that he had a chance to firm up his position.
He did.
In those practices, and seemingly it hasn't happened. And the guy that reminds me of Tuttle from last year, I've made this point before, but the way Tyler Johnson's name keeps getting brought up, I mean, I feel like
I think they feel like he's going to be a really good SEC tackle.
When's
he going to be ready?
Just sort of like now. Tuttle last year, it might be a situation where they find out Saturday night that Tyler Johnson needs to be on the field a lot.
Yeah. To me, I know some people are worried about it. Some people are really worried about it. I don't think it's that big a deal because Dylan Wade started every game at left tackle for last year, and he was pretty solid, I thought. I thought he did a good job. I don't remember him getting embarrassed by a whole lot of rush ins in the SEC. I know he wasn't perfect, but most left tackles aren't perfect playing in this conference. So I think they'll figure it out. I think it's the right move to rotate some guys through the first few games before we get to SEC play. Grade him out and see who's the best, and then settle on it.
You would sure hope that you know, but as you're heading into the Arkansas game, and you feel good about it after the Arkansas game. That's you've got a few games.
You've got plenty of snaps to do it, and Jake Thornton has shown in his career that he likes to rotate offensive linemen to begin with. So that's just been a part of his plan from the start. And
You think it's Johnson Wade to start the game Saturday night, or you think Percy's?
No, I think Percy probably starts Saturday.
Possibly. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler comes out of it or before long is at the top. Hey, we appreciate the call, Bill. We are way behind. We're excited that it is game week. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box. Got one from Mitch we'll talk about a little bit later on. He actually had an answer to a question I had a little bit earlier in the show. We can talk about that and more. Southeastern Industrial Contractors sponsors the podcast and the text box. Big shout out to our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from Auburn Sports. Drew at the controls here on the Monday Drive.
Squeal! Squeal!
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Drew running the controls as usual. Welcome in, everybody. Yes, it is game week. We were at Hugh Freeze's press conference earlier today, and we got the notes, including the depth chart. That's what we were talking about a while ago. I mean, the offensive depth chart was what you would expect. There was only one position where there was not a clear-cut number one. And that was left tackle, and we talked about that a little bit. It was Percy Lewis or Tyler Johnson there at left tackle. But on defense, every player that was listed on defense was in bold with an or. I mean, so you had three or four players at every position.
Yes, you did. But now it is in an order.
It is sort of in an order that you would think. And like we were saying a while ago, I think it's telling the players – that aren't on the – this really appears to be a list of the players that DJ Durkin and his defensive staff feel comfortable with right now heading into the Alabama A&M game.
Yep. C.J. Johnson on the list.
There are a few guys.
Is it a defense or a rowing team? Look at all those oars, right, Bill?
I mean, there's
That's good.
But I'm
Drew liked that one. All right, no, it really is. It's surprising to see because I think there are a couple of positions that have been Like, it does feel like you have a starter, and it's going to be a guy who's going to play.
You're right. You mentioned Keldrick.
I mentioned Keldrick and J-Mac because Hugh Freeze mentioned Keldrick and J-Mac.
Well, I would think Keontae Scott, Kay, and Lee are going to be starters.
Well, that was JG's question, right, about the, you know, are there really – is it really that flexible defensively, or is it, you know, is it about inclusion and you know, building mystery and things like that? I think he used it – smokescreen was the word – JG used in his question, and
I don't think DJ Durkin particularly wants to list to put it out. Hugh obviously isn't fond of it, but I think intentionally doesn't want to.
And Saturday night's game, if it goes as planned, and Auburn is able to build a lead where they can showcase their depth, you know, that's a different sort of, you know, looking at the snap counts afterward it's only going to be so helpful. That second week, Cal, is a game where, yeah, I really want to see how defensive players are utilized. And if it really looks like, yeah, we got 37 guys that help us, or if it's that number is a little bit smaller, and we see some positions where, I mean, I would think when available, I mean, let me ask you this, has Wooden solidified his spot and made it seem like maybe there's five guys in the secondary that are the primary, because we were expecting maybe Sylvester and Wooden to battle for that other safety spot.
I don't think
spot.
Anybody's sewed up a spot at safety.
Yeah, well, I think Thompson is going to start.
I do. But,
yeah.
And
I mean Bug Thompson would be that, the safest bet.
I think there are like five other guys that are battling to try to get more playing time.
Yeah, I think they'll play a lot of guys, and as we move through the season, that number will lessen once we get to SEC games and once we're in competitive games, mm-hmm. right? So
there's an entire.
I think your defensive line. You're still going to see six guys there for those two interior positions. There are eight that are listed there, but I think six is probably what they're
going to
get.
And we'll probably get one gets 30, and the other two get 20 or something.
And the other position it's going to be like that is at receiver, where the other day Derek Nix was saying six, maybe seven.
Yep.
Hugh Freeze said six.
Yep.
Today.
Yep.
And they're nine on the depth chart, so it's going to get.
There's eight on the depth chart actually. They left off Bryce Kane.
Oh, okay.
Yep. He was not.
We did hear about Bryce Kane potentially contributing
as a punt return
on special teams. You know, early in his career, and maybe he works in. That's a crowded group at slot receiver.
Bryce
not getting here until later. I do wonder if maybe they focus on special teams and limit how much you see him at receiver. I don't know. But with Jackson and with Malcolm, you can utilize Lewis in the slot. He's done that a lot in his career. Previously, like they have options they feel really good about there. And in the secondary, Bill, you could, if you wanted to go hockey style with the depth in the secondary, I mean, you've got a starting unit of Keontae, Champ, and Kayan as your front three corners, and then your safeties. Let's say it's Bug Thompson and Caleb Wooden for now. Your second group of but whichever safety you want to go with between Terrence Love, Sylvester Smith, and you've also got Caleb Harris, right? In that group.
Yeah, obviously Caleb Harris. That's somebody you've got to mention.
I mean, two of those three would be the next guys up at safety. J.C. Hart, Kite, and Jay Crawford. Would those be your next three? Who'd be your next three sort of corner slot
J.C. Kite, and then are your next two, I think, and then the two freshmen, Crawford and Amon Lane.
Does the Colorado transfer factor in at some point here?
He's there at the star at that. Mm-hmm. At the
he could maybe be the next guy up for Champ.
He's the guy behind Champ.
He's the guy behind Champ in the slot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that where?
Yes, Jacquez is.
That's where.
Actually,
him
and Kinsley Louder, Faust, and another
freshman.
Heard more about Faustin lately. Sounds like he had a good.
I've heard more about Robinson all of a sudden.
Robinson
didn't hear
too.
Much about him for a little bit, but then the other day, that's when DJ Durkin mentioned him as coming on. So
the biggest issue on the defense right now is the depth at cornerback. Keontae and Kayan are
because of their inexperience.
Right.
I don't think it's because of their talent.
I think Keontae and Kayan are high-end SEC-type starters. I'm not sure anybody behind them is to that level right now. And really important to keep those guys healthy.
Well, nobody behind them has really played college football all that much. I mean, you're talking about J.C. And the next guy behind them is either J.C. or Antonio Kite, right?
Like Kite has played the most, and he didn't play much. He played just a few snaps last year at Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, and Kite was, I mean, playing time was a reason Kite went in the portal. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, I mean, the pursuit of more of it. And maybe he'll get more of it.
He'll get more of it here for sure.
And I guess the flip side of that, Brian, is I think that it's going to be in this era of college football. And Hugh Freeze's answer about how you can't talk to players the same way you used to be able to.
I thought that was great.
I thought it was great and fascinating and honest.
Very honest.
Candid. Absolutely. Loved it. Loved it. However, I would say that one byproduct of this era, Brian, is that you don't get to have experience depth very often anywhere, because experience depth wants to go, especially at positions that only play one guy. Experience depth wants to go play somewhere. Like, they're gonna go somewhere where they can play more. And to keep an experienced corner on the bench to start the season, it's gonna be harder than ever before, right? Like, you're gonna go into, I mean, last year Auburn went into the season and the reserve options at corner were Kay and Lee and Champ Anthony. You know, guys who'd never, a true freshman, Kay and Lee, and newly arrived junior college product, Champ Anthony. And it's remarkably similar. And there were times when there were growing pains last year with Kay and Lee and Champ Anthony on the field against high-level SEC competition. But I wonder if that's just going to be how it goes now, is that you don't really get to, I mean, your experience depth is going to leave, and you're going to have, maybe it's just 2 years in a row, so I'm overthinking it a little bit. But I think it's gonna be harder than ever to hold on to guys like that if there's not a starting role in line for them.
Maybe that's why you list 37 guys and you hope you can play 30 of them.
But then you look at schools like Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, LSU. They have more depth than
they lose a lot of guys. They do. But they keep you know replacing them with talented guys.
And if Auburn had Colton Hood, who left late, if Auburn had Tyler Scott healthy, who got injured during summer workouts.
But he's another guy who doesn't have a whole lot of experience.
Not a lot of experience, but guys who've been in the system, mm-hmm. and you feel a little bit more comfortable with going out there early.
I'm excited to see J.C.
Oh, yeah. He's had a terrific fall camp. He has stepped up. Could be the first corner. Him and Kite are the first two corners off the bench for sure.
All right. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. Text us on the Drive text box. We'll get to the text from Mitch when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill and Dan, joined by our Monday regular, that is Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Fun times, Brian. I mean, it's here. There was some, we were talking about it a little earlier, some interesting ball games there over the weekend. I mean, games that were supposed to be blowouts were not.
Yeah, I hate that for Florida State. Tough.
Yeah,
tough
and New Mexico. Man, New Mexico had Montana State, it sure appeared, but they let that one slip away.
Future Auburn opponent, New Mexico.
That is right. Game three opponent. They look pretty good.
Yeah. Against
Montana State, who was a solid favorite in that ball game. So I mean, there was some fun football over the weekend there with week zero, and now we jump right into it. Auburn obviously doesn't have the toughest challenge that anybody does here this opening week, but just I think there should be a lot of excitement about this.
So hold on a second. So Montana State came back and won that game.
They did.
Yeah, I mean that was because it was shocking.
No, but I mean New Mexico dominated
them
for three quarters of the game.
Yeah, it was 31. I mean it was 31-14 New Mexico after a touchdown to open the second half, and they. I mean, you don't think you're about to see a team go 21
cruise control.
You don't think a team's about to go 21 love to come back and win this game. But sure enough, Montana State in the fourth quarter, three straight drives and the go ahead touchdown with 10 seconds left to shock Auburn's week three opponent.
Yes,
that's correct. Yeah, Auburn's week three opponent, New Mexico. That game was in Albuquerque.
You know, one thing that sort of sticks out to me that, you know, college football has changed, you know, with the expanding conferences and such is, I mean, we're starting off week one at 11 a.m. with Clemson at Georgia.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, that's a big-time game right there. That would normally be an afternoon or an evening game, but there it is on ABC.
I think ESPN's really going to try to push noon as a huge time for college football. Like, I think they're going to try to have more and more of the biggest game of the week being a noon kick, a noon Eastern kick. I know fans don't necessarily love to hear that idea.
No, home fans. Know,
as
home
yeah, fans folks who want to tailgate all day. But I think there's probably some wisdom in that for TV audiences. Like, if you want the – there's probably logic in there's a bigger television audience available at noon on a Saturday than there is at 7 p.m. on a Saturday if you're trying to maximize mm-hmm. viewership. Saturday nights are traditionally tougher nights for any sort of television event compared to any other night of the week because folks are out of the house more on Saturdays traditionally than other nights. So I think there's other reasons why CBS has that sort of – hold on 3:30/2:30. So I think it would make sense.
And the Big Ten now, they have nothing to do with the SEC.
Right. And so, yeah, it's going to be, but they're still, I think CBS is still going to try to put the national game of the week for their game, you know, whenever they can.
Akron at Ohio State at 2:30 p.m. That's tough.
At 11, at 11, you got Penn State, West Virginia at 11 as well.
Two big games right off the bat. You've got Miami at Florida as the afternoon game on ABC. Much better than Akron
really
at Ohio State.
I really don't know what to expect there.
I don't either.
Some people think, well, Florida's going to make a huge bounce back. They had better for Billy Napier. But I just don't know. I don't know what to expect out of Miami either.
I do. The one argument for Florida is, and Brian, we were talking about DJU's struggles a little bit in the Florida State game.
Graham Mertz?
Yeah, I mean, Graham Mertz is a guy who got better as the season.
Better than anybody thought he would be last year.
Yeah, got better as the season went on, was better than people thought, and is back for year two mm-hmm. as Florida's quarterback, and maybe against a Miami team that's had a lot of changes, right? Where's Van Dyke now? He's at Wisconsin, and Miami brought in Cam Ward, who, like DJU, was very good in the Pac-12 last year, but it's different to make the jump. I mean, Peyton Thorne had been good to very good in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And came to Auburn and really struggled in his first year. That's a tough transition, and I think we're going to – I mean, I have a feeling – I would feel comfortable – how about this? And this is going to be an SEC homer pick too. I would feel comfortable picking against two trendy teams with new quarterbacks that are going to play on the road in the SEC on Saturday. I think Florida's going to beat Miami. And I think A&M's going to beat Notre Dame.
You know what the 6:30 game is that night, Saturday night, right?
Yeah, well, A&M, Notre Dame is one of them.
Notre Dame. So ABC has got
three
huge games, 11 a.m., 2:30, 6:30, for their first season.
Welcome to big time college football.
Yeah. ESPN, lineup, ABC. Right. Yeah, and I think, I mean, Notre Dame is bringing a new quarterback, and I saw something over the weekend that if the projected starting five holds for Notre Dame, they're going to have a starting offensive line with six career starts going into College Station. New quarterback.
That is not a good recipe.
New quarterback and six career starts. I know it's a new coach at Texas A&M, but Brian, there's still defense. There's still talent on the A&M defense.
Yes,
Mike Elko is not a stranger to that team as the former defensive coordinator. And that's a team. Granted, he didn't switch teams, but Connor Wegman is a quarterback who's back for another, got the benefit of being QB1 all offseason. And I think Notre Dame is walking into a real hornet's nest on Saturday night. And I think that could be a game where A&M puts people. If you really believe in Notre Dame as a playoff contender, I think A&M has a chance to put you on notice a little bit. And if you're not as sold on Notre Dame, I think this could be a game where you come away feeling like you've got evidence proving as to why you were unsure about them.
Not done with ABC Sunday night.
That's LSU, right?
USC at LSU.
Yeah.
I mean, what a weekend for
ABC. And how about four massive games with the SEC?
Yeah.
Non-conference games. I mean, I think we've talked about when Auburn gets into a position where they feel better about the overall talent on the roster and their ability to compete against the best teams in college football, maybe Hugh Freeze will be eager to schedule games like that week one. So, you know what? Yeah, let's open the season top 25 matchup at home or on the road against a non-conference, a team in the top 20 from a different conference. Auburn's not doing that this year, and I think probably to Auburn's benefit.
No, I think it's wise not to.
To Auburn's benefit this year, they're not doing that. But I don't know if I would necessarily rule it out in the future for Auburn, especially if they can get into.
No, if you know what you have and you feel very confident in what you have, and that's something I think right now, comfortable is more what Hugh Freeze is, not confident. I mean, he said that today. He doesn't really know. He feels good about the talent, but he hadn't seen what, you know, how they're going to react when they get out there on the field under the lights.
Yeah, confident would reflect some degree of certainty in the future.
Right.
Right, in a way that
you've got more of a proven commodity.
Sure, and I would also say, look at how feeling better about your overall level of talent and your ability to compete. Look at how that's changed Bruce Pearl's scheduling over the last 5, 7, 8 years. Right, I mean Auburn wasn't seeking out games like this in year one or year two under Bruce Pearl for a reason. And so yeah, maybe it's to Auburn's benefit now that they're not playing, you know, at Michigan. You know, to start the season or something like that. You know what I mean? A team in the – I just picked a random team in the top 15, you know, not non-conference, you know. But it's maybe soon Auburn can get there, and there are a couple of SEC teams playing those kind of games, right? You've got Georgia-Clemson and Florida-Miami and A&M Notre Dame and LSU-USC, which makes this feel like one of the bigger week ones ever, right? Like, you think about it. Usually a lot of teams are playing –
without having those – you know, sponsored preseason games.
Yeah, the fact that these aren't neutral site games either. These are regular season games. Yeah, these are regular season games. And I hope the playoff committee rewards all the teams that scheduled these games too. Like, I hope the playoff committee says, like, yeah, you know what, if it's in a pinch, you know, we'll give you some credit for being ambitious in your non-conference scheduling. But it should make for just a loaded. I feel like there's going to be some eyes on Notre Dame A&M in the press box while we're watching, Auburn against the other A&M.
All right, we will get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
How about
free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Good question. Was it Brian that asked that during the break?
It was, yeah.
I did not think about this, so that would have been a good question to ask if the team has selected captains yet.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it till now.
Last year, Hugh Freeze announced it at his pregame press conference, but that was on a Thursday. So right. It may be a team meeting, and they may be voting on team captains here over the next day or two.
I also think there's a chance, and I don't want to I have not been tipped off. So if this happens, it's just coincidence. But although it was a shrewd prediction by me, if it happens, there's a chance you could announce it on Tiger Talk tonight. Yeah, there's an episode. Episode of Tiger Talk previewing tonight, previewing Saturday's game.
That's right, and that'll be on Wings 94.3 immediately following the drive.
And I believe, and Andy might be listening, so he could correct us if we get this wrong. I believe this is going to be the start of the game week editions of Tiger Talk, where they're on location. Right,
starting. It is. He mentioned that last week.
Yes, they're going to be at Baumhauer's this.
Andy said he will ask.
Andy will ask about captains tonight. Nice. On Tiger Talk, and nice. He doesn't have to credit the drive, although you never know. it's so cool that Andy Burcham is both as good as he is at what he does, and is also like cool and approachable and things. Like it's
sometimes I just feel like he's checking up on us.
That's true. But anyway,
we don't get too far out of bounds.
That's, he does a great job.
There has not been an announcement for captains. A couple of last year's captains are back, as you pointed out, Bill. I think Peyton Thorne and Luke Deal were both captains on. On last year's team.
Who were they? I'm trying to remember all the captains.
Was Marcus a captain on defense last year?
Who was a defensive captain?
I was trying to remember if it was Marcus or Jalen, who I for some reason I want to say, and I could have both of those wrong, but I know Auburn brought Eugene McAllister to Media Days last year, but I don't remember if he was – or Elijah McAllister, not Eugene. Elijah McAllister, Auburn brought to Media Days last year. I don't remember if he was voted a captain on last year's team.
Actually, it was Cam Stutz.
Oh, Cam Stutz.
Elijah McAllister and Peyton Thorne.
Okay.
So Luke was not. So Auburn has one of the three captains.
And on a senior laden team, it's tough to predict, you know, who could be selected, although Peyton Thorne, the one captain back from
He has a chance to be a four-time team captain. He was team captain his last 2 years at Michigan State.
Well, and leadership has been something from the moment he arrived. His teammates have talked about his ability to give and command respect. Wouldn't be all that shocking if Auburn,
no,
you know,
no, not at all.
If QB1 is picked as one of the captains.
Yep. So again, Tiger Talk coming up in a little over an hour over on Wings 94.3, the Game Week edition from Baumhauer.
All right. So text box, two updates real quick, Bill.
Yeah.
Mitch listening in points out that Miami lost in the opener to Florida in 83 and went on to win the national championship.
Going way back.
That season.
Yes. That was good a fun pull. Football season. I'd take Auburn doing what they did in 83.
Right. You've had I believe Ohio State.
They're in the playoffs. If they did what they did in 83.
The Urban Meyer Ohio State team.
Of course, that Auburn 83 team probably, well, they in some places they did win a national championship.
Yeah, well, they're getting a chance to play to prove it.
The Urban Meyer Ohio State team, I believe, lost very early to Virginia Tech. I don't think it was the opener. It might have been week two where that was their lone loss.
Miami should not have won the national championship that year.
83?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And then we also had, and this person's going to stay anonymous, someone asking, more of a comment than a question, I do not understand Notre Dame being ranked this high. I think this is the year that coach and program come back down to earth. I cannot believe when you look across the roster there's also a comment that they hope that Notre Dame they hope that Notre Dame crashes back to earth so it improves Auburn's position.
Yeah, I was going to say with Deuce Knight,
it would improve Auburn's position with a certain quarterback who is going to be in Auburn this weekend, according to reports. Is it an official visit? Is that the talk that? Are there officials?
Yeah, there can be officials. Okay. I just don't know if he will be in Auburn, right. So he'll be treated the same.
Yeah. And honestly, there's not much difference now.
No, there's not.
There's really not.
No. All right. We will get to our top of the hour break. We're halfway done. Love for you to join in hour number two of The Drive, which is coming up.
Halloween is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com and Drew, as usual, at the controls. We'd love for you to join in. It's the game week, first game week Monday edition of The Drive. We got our opportunity with Coach Hugh Freeze today for a press conference. We got the game notes. I had not noticed Dan pointing out that Alabama A&M with a typo on the front page of their game notes. They missed one of the A's. There are a lot of A's in Alabama A&M.
Tell you what,
they left one of them out.
When you're writing in all caps, sometimes some of those can slip by the goalie.
Alabama A&M. There's a lot of A's. They just left one of them out. It came out Alabama A&M. But that is Auburn's opponent on Saturday night, 6:30. Going to be warm one. Over at Jordan.
Cameron Peck proofreading services available.
Things like that usually jump off the page at me. I didn't really, I mean, when you asked me about it, I looked at it, I didn't see it at first.
Because
there are so many A's.
I think you showing me so many typos on so many things over the years has sort of, it's trained my my radar. By the way, making his debut for ESPN as a game analyst, former Texas running back Fozzie Whitaker will be on the call for the game on Saturday on ESPN. It's SEC Network Plus, which is, it's so confusing to explain.
Which means you need to be at the game.
No. Well, it's, so you
for
you,
me it does.
Well, no. We can make it work for you too. Because right. What you need to be able to do is you need to subscribe to a cable service that has the SEC network.
Oh yeah. I can get that.
And then you need
to go to ESPN and then to Plus.
Yes, and then you have
football and go to college football.
And then you have to give your TV provider information to ESPN's website or the ESPN app.
If you've ever had one particular service, sometimes it can be very difficult.
It can be very difficult
to default to that.
Well, especially on your TV device,
yes.
Right? Like on your laptop, there's usually no problem at all telling the ESPN app, hey, this is my TV provider, here are the information. Especially if you're like a YouTube TV subscriber, which is, I think, the problem Bill is explaining, is trying to convince the ESPN app that you're a YouTube TV subscriber when you're using an internet service that's also a cable provider to a lot of people. And so, but you're going to need to, you're going to need your just an ESPN Plus subscription will not get you the game on Saturday.
You need to be a
subscriber to the cable bundle, and then you need to also put those credentials into the ESPN app on your device or on your website or on your phone, whatever. And that's how you can watch the game on SEC Network Plus. You can listen to the game, Bill.
You can listen to it on Wings 94.3.
That's right.
You can get things started. Uncle T-Bone and Jack are going to be, they've extended their pregame show.
Oh, wow.
Game Day on Wings is going to now start 5 hours before kickoff because they're going to be coming on before the Auburn network comes on.
So when Auburn plays at 11?
Which is great for the 6:30 game. They'll be on at 1:30. When Auburn plays at 11 a.m., they'll be here at the crack of dawn.
That's biscuits and gravy.
Absolutely.
That's biscuits and gravy with Uncle T-Bone.
6 o'clock in the morning.
Don Dunn will be driving home from the smoker overnight. Over at Country's. Maybe he can pop in for some 6 a.m. analysis. We did, Bill. We did a couple of those way back, right?
Oh, no kidding.
That's
not fun.
When the tailgate predated, when the tailgate preceded the network pregame.
I think you should be able to float whether we're going to do a pre or a post. We may come on 3 hours after the game, but that'd be better than 5 hours before the game when it's a morning game.
Do we have an 11 a.m. kick on the schedule yet?
Looks like Missouri. I mean, Missouri is one of the in that early window, so we don't know if it's 11:30, but it's going to be early. Yeah, right, we do know that Missouri game is early.
So get ready for that. But yeah, listen to the coverage on Wings 94.3 with Game Day on Wings, and then the network coverage with Andy and the gang of the call of Saturday night's game between Auburn and Alabama A&M.
All right, we're just getting underway here in hour number two of the drive, and the second hour of the show is brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care. I went to them. I have full use of my right hand. I just can't right now. I don't need to strain it any. I almost forget at times because it feels so much better than it did. Thanks to Dr. Wilson and the great folks at EAMC there that helped me get this right wrist. This thing had been bothering me. It had been bothering me for a couple of years. Where, I mean, it felt like there was a tourniquet around my arm just below my bicep. I mean, I'd wake up a lot of times and couldn't clench my fist. I'd feel like I needed to hang the arm down, shake it, try to get some feeling back in it. It is much better. And this is just, it was just Thursday. I mean, I know I didn't come in Friday because they said don't drive, but it's been fine. Fortunately, I'm used to driving, steering with the steering wheel more with my left hand than my right. So
I want to say too, and we don't have to get into too many specifics, but a lovely event on Saturday at Cameron Estates in honor.
Hey,
of
– I tried to clean the yard up with my left arm on Saturday. I mean, it was just one of those cleaning the blowing the leaves and things out of the way. But yeah, it was great. We had. Must have been about 40 folks at the house.
And Kennedy's a lot of fun. Like it really is. She is. I mean,
she
that's
really
going to be. And you're going to have a couple of granddaughters running around.
I'll have another one. Another one. Looking right around the first of October. I don't think they planned it this way. Brian. But during the month when Auburn football's away from town,
perfect,
away from campus, I think that was great timing. To have the next member of the family.
I told Matt during the party, it's like they're gonna be close enough in age and live in the same town, they will either be best friends or mortal enemies. Like those are the two outcomes of these two.
I would say,
and I'm rooting for best friends because I would say
that about sisters.
That's what I mean. So I mean, the fact that they're not
three younger sisters.
They're not sisters, but they are close enough in age and will live in the same town that I imagine they will see each other often enough. But knowing you and your family, I would lean towards best friends. But it's gonna be really cool, and it was great to see everybody on Saturday.
Yeah, it was great having the folks over for the baby shower.
I pocketed older son at Kathy's insistence. Yeah. I pocketed a plate of the Chex Mix. Came home with
that's where it went.
That's yeah. at Kathy's insistance.
We kept a bag of that. We kept some of Floyd's sliders. Ooh. We had just a few of Floyd's sliders.
Open the food truck, Floyd.
Floyd Teresa, I mean, just went overboard.
Just unbelievable. Yeah.
It was great. All right. So, yeah, we'll talk a little sports if you'd like here in hour number two of the drive. Again, brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic, and you can check them online at orthoclinic.com. You can join us by calling the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Big shout out to everybody at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They're an Alabama-based firm with some exciting opportunities for folks seeking a great career, experienced folks in the trades, or students looking for a great career without attending a four-year college. 334-209-6355 to learn more about Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
All right. In hour number one, we talked a little bit about some of the comments from Hugh Freeze. To talk a little more really about the depth chart and some of the things leading up to the ball game. Brian, I mean, anything that really caught your attention from what Hugh had to say today?
Well, he did go over the injuries, which I thought was important. Sounds like Keontae Scott and Austin Keys are cleared to play. You just wants to see them in practice this week just to make sure they look good. But the trainers and such have said they're good to go, so to speak. I think you called them probable.
Right.
Kondre Lambert-Smith returned to full practices last week, and you said he looked good. And then he said that Alex McPherson was probably not going to play week one, but started to kick last week and feels like he's on the road to return, and it sounds like he expects him to return at some point this season.
Great news about Alex. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll get back to kicking like he used to soon, but the fact that he's feeling better, right? Because that sounded harrowing.
Yeah.
You know, what was going on with Alex over the summer and this offseason. So, yeah, great news. And again, you know, what a luxury Auburn has in Towns Magoo to go land a homegrown kicker with this kind of potential who can be insurance in case something unexpected, like an unforeseen intestinal medical issue,
right,
you know, pops up with your kicker. To have something like that with Towns is, what a luxury for Coach Freeze and his staff. And also, great news to hear that Alex is feeling better and feeling well enough to get some kicking in before the end of fall camp.
Yeah.
And, you look at it, Hugh Freeze has mentioned a couple of times how he was concerned about balancing out having full contact but also protecting his players from major injuries. He made it through preseason practice now, barring something happening this week, without any major injuries that we know of.
And you know, a few of the transfers that we've talked to that are seniors – coming in, have said this is as physical a camp as they've been through. So it's not as though they didn't have any contact this fall. And that's what I said to Doug earlier. I mean, cross your fingers. You've still got a week to go. Yeah. But Auburn has come through this camp in really good shape. Yeah. And that's the main thing you want to do. You want to get them ready, but you want to have them ready for Saturday.
Yeah, and you want to have them ready for week four against Arkansas and week five against Oklahoma, right? That's the most important thing. So – they're going to play a lot of players these first 3 weeks. Of course, California is a Are they a Power Four team still?
ACC.
Yeah, they're an ACC. So they're playing in it. It's an SEC-ACC matchup.
So they are a Power Four team. So that is a game that'll be a little bit different than Alabama A&M. And who's week three?
They're nowhere
near New Mexico team that almost beat Montana State the other night.
Yeah. So, but still, I think Auburn should be, favored pretty handily in all three games. Has a chance to start out 3-0 and should be 4-0 with Arkansas coming to town too.
Cal and Arkansas are both teams that I think if Auburn's a lot better than last year's team, I would expect Auburn to show it in both of those games where they can take a step forward. And I mean, the fact that both those games are at home, you would think that an Auburn team that's taken a significant step forward from last year, an Auburn team that has taken a significant step forward from last year has will beat both Cal and Arkansas. I think the question is how significant of the step and what do those games look like? Is Auburn in a close third quarter, fourth quarter situation. I mean, they were in a fight for their lives against Cal last year. In the second half of that game, they had multiple moments in that game where Auburn had to have it, and had to get the play, or they were going to be in real trouble to win the football game. And they were able to roll seven, every time, and get out of there with a win. But I think the point we were making earlier about how do you rationalize Florida State feeling like they were taking a step forward all offseason with laying an egg against Georgia Tech?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's just because I didn't know that Florida State would be better than last year.
Sure.
I mean, I just you just didn't. I didn't feel like that. They're gonna have a step up from Jordan Travis at quarterback, which they don't. I don't think right now. I think that's a big thing. I mean, Auburn has more proven guys or guys who are back that need something to prove, like in a Peyton Thorne. I think they have more, concrete evidence to feel like they're better than they were a year ago. Auburn's much more talented than they were a year ago. Florida State's not more talented than they were a year ago.
I think if Auburn, and that's why I agree with everything you just said, Bill, which is why if Auburn were to blow a tire against Cal or Arkansas and drop a home game early, suddenly it's like, well, what happened? What's wrong? And where do you go from here? And it's imperative that it's not just about evaluating what you have; it's about taking care of business and winning those two games. Because you probably need to be to trend in the right direction. You probably need to be 4-0 when Oklahoma comes to town and give that game your best shot.
About to get to the phone, I wanted to get both your guys' thoughts, because one of the things that I was asked about, how should Auburn fans feel about going into this ball game? I said, I think there should be genuine anticipation, some excitement. I think, Brian, at least my feeling is going into this season, this is going to be a more fun team to watch, both offensively and defensively. I think they're going to take shots. I think they're going to be more aggressive on both sides of the ball.
I definitely believe that on defense, and I believe they need to be and should be and are talking about being offense, but I want to see it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know?
I mean, they've got the receivers now.
I think so, too.
There's no question.
I think you need to put it out there for them, and let's see if they come up with it. Yep.
You got to start doing it. You got to start showing it.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it, and Marcus is up next. Hey, Marcus.
Happy Monday afternoon, guys.
Hey, Marcus.
Hey, listen, as an Auburn fan, I think we should all be very excited. We're going to have a great year. I think we have a much better offensive coaching staff. I think Ken Austin does a great job with quarterbacks, with he and you coaching Peyton. You're going to see Peyton that had the 10-win season at Michigan State. We've got a much better receiving core. My only concern is I think we've got to make sure we solidify the left tackle. And I know we're a little young in the secondary, but if we can hold up in secondary, if we play well at left tackle, guys, I firmly can see a 9-win season. I really believe that we can beat Missouri. I believe that we can beat Oklahoma, and we can beat A&M. And if we do that, we're going to have one of those years that everybody's excited about, and the recruiting is just going to continue to get better and better. And I think when the recruiting class is over, we're a top-three class, because I think we're going to add the kid from Parker High School, we'll add Deuce, maybe get Babaloa, the offensive lineman. And I'm telling you, he has really got things going in the right direction. And if you go back less than 2 years ago when you got there, you know what a dumpster fire Auburn was and what he's done the last 20 months. It's amazing. And I think we're all going to be really happy with this football season. And the expectation should be at least 8-4.
I think anything less than 8-4 is going to feel like a disappointment.
I mean, you're going to absolutely. I think the flip side.
I'm still 7-5.
Yeah, but I don't know that you're thrilled with a 7-5 season.
The flip side.
No one's going to be happy with 7-5.
Well, I mean, Auburn's had three consecutive losing seasons.
Yeah, but if you just go from three straight, you know, 6-7, 5-7, 6-7, 7-5, that's not like wow.
But I will say, let me say that Auburn would probably if you were handicapping it right now. Auburn would need to pull off an upset to do better than 7-5.
Sure.
I would say right now Auburn
when
is
when you look at the odds.
Right now I would say Auburn is a pretty solid underdog, depending on how you view the Oklahoma game. Maybe not solid, maybe Oklahoma's more than 3, maybe it's 3, maybe it's more than 3. I don't know. But I would say Auburn is an underdog in 5 of the 12 games on the schedule. Mm-hmm. So to do better than 7-5, you have to win all the games where you're expected
all you gotta do is to win your home games.
Yeah, you got
That's why Hugh Freeze was talking about he wants to see him out there Saturday playing the way that Auburn can play and sustain at Jordan-Hare Stadium. If they do that, they're 8-4.
I'm interested to see if there's much separation between A&M, Oklahoma, and Missouri this year, and if there is, who's better, who's the best of the three, who is better than whom?
Because
I don't know. Those seem like three games where, I mean, that's the difference in going. If you handle the other ones, that's the difference in going 7-5 and 10-2.
Yeah,
those three games.
I think Auburn will be an underdog in 6 games this year.
Let's at Kentucky, right, you think at Kentucky would be? Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on how things go.
Right,
up
it depends
the
how teams.
Yeah,
look.
We weren't even talking about Kentucky, but you're right. That's another one
Kentucky
that you can lump
into.
Kentucky
was picked above Auburn in the standings, correct? Mm-hmm. And they're playing at home.
I believe Auburn was picked one spot ahead of Kentucky.
Were they?
But the game's in Lexington.
Right.
Go ahead, Marcus.
If Peyton Thorne plays the way he did at Michigan State when they won 10 games, how many games are we an underdog in? 4.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe
Oklahoma and A&M probably. are both ranked pretty solidly ahead of Auburn. Those games are at home, so maybe
Missouri
maybe you could say
above Auburn.
Yeah, I would. I mean,
I can understand where Auburn can certainly go into Kentucky and go into Missouri and win both those games handily. I'm not saying that can't happen.
Guys, here's what we saw the other day: Florida State was a 10-point favorite over Georgia Tech, and if Florida State doesn't have a great kicker, that game's not even close.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia Tech physically dominated Florida State, and I think Auburn's going to be a much more physical football team. We're so deep on the defensive line and offensive line, and we have 3 great running backs. So I'm telling you guys, you may disagree, but no one saw Missouri winning 10 games last year. We're going to be the surprise team of the SEC this year. Just watch what happens.
I think that's possible.
Did
be
Nick Saban not say that Saturday?
That's
absolutely did.
Yeah, but
he knows more football than anyone else.
I would agree with that.
What's that?
Yeah, he knows more football than this room does.
No, I think that Auburn
Nick
makes.
Nick Saban said that Saturday.
No, I mean Auburn has
Auburn's a surprise team in the SEC.
That would be great. I mean, to me, Auburn needs to have a good enough season this year for everybody to be confident in Hugh Freeze's program,
excited about the future,
so they can hold on to this top 5 class, continue to build this number 1 class in the country for 2026, and once you get into 26 and 27, and you've stacked these classes. Then Auburn's starting to compete for championships every single year, and you don't just have a championship contending team once every 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years, whatever it is under the previous coaches, but every year you're competing for it.
It really is interesting to slice the schedule up into. It feels like you're a solid favorite at home against Arkansas and Vanderbilt. It feels like you're a solid underdog on the road at Bama and Georgia. Mm-hmm. And then you've got 4 games in between where it's a little bit more eye of the beholder. You know, how solid is Auburn as an underdog against Missouri or Kentucky on the road or Oklahoma or A&M at home. Those 4 games that sort of decide, you know, it really is the story of your schedule. You know, are you 6-6? Are you 10-2? Are you
somewhere in between?
Are you somewhere in between? And because those are very, and you could be it feels like the same team could have, you know, if you played this thing 100 times. They could go 6-6 in some of these seasons. They could go 10-2.
There's going to be some close games that have come down to the wire.
Yeah.
Right? You just don't know.
The difference in a great season, a good season, or a disappointing season is how do you handle those close games?
My thing is it's just so important for the administration at Auburn, the fan base at Auburn, the supporters, the alumni, the boosters, to all remain confident in Freeze and his future here if they want to keep this together. We saw what happened to Napier in Florida after year two and how it's completely fallen apart. And now he's the coach that's on the top of everybody's hot seat. That's how quickly things can turn around in just 3 months. That's why Auburn needs to perform well, but there also doesn't need to be unrealistic expectations for the season, in my opinion.
Appreciate it, Marcus. Good stuff.
Yep. We need to get to our first break of the afternoon. You can join in as well, 334-321-1390, or you can text us on the Drive text box.
334-564-1840, the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Right back with more of hour number two of the Monday Drive.
Yellowwood knows that a five
on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 27 minutes after 5. Yeah, we've been pretty blabby. It's like our first break has gone 20-something minutes each hour. But it's, I guess,
got a lot to talk about. It's game week.
It really is. Yeah. There is a lot to talk about. Again, as Brian was saying, I mean, one of the really bright spots is the fact that Auburn's gotten to this point very healthy.
Yeah.
And they'll go into Saturday. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to see the guys that are listed as the starters or the guys that start in there for an awful lot. This,
you hope, you know, not.
You hope that this is an opportunity to get a chance to give everybody a little audition out there on the field.
You want to get those guys in for a quarter or two, the starters.
So many young players.
Yep, play a bunch of guys and get ready for California and everybody be healthy coming out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting mix of a team. It's a team that has a lot of seniors. They've got around 30 seniors on this team.
Yeah.
And then a lot of young guys, a lot of first and second year guys. You don't have many juniors on this team.
Nope.
There are an awful lot of freshmen, redshirt freshmen, and seniors.
Well, there's a recruiting class that's missing, right?
Yeah, yeah. For some strange reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the dark ages. I just try to forget about those.
I mean, for all the concern and questions about the transfer portal, if it weren't for the transfer portal, we would not be anywhere near where we are right now.
Such a major rebuilding.
This would have been you're throwing a bunch of youngsters to the wolves. Oh, what you're doing right now.
Oh, the thought of if Hugh Freeze had tried to replenish this roster without transfers. If he had tried to, you know, I mean,
a bunch of JUCO players, obviously.
Well, and he said,
then you're worried about your chemistry.
Oh,
and
what he said, and this was the trap Auburn fell into, was that in the previous administration, was Hugh Freeze really didn't want to be overly reliant on transfers in his starting lineup in the second and new transfers. You know, bringing in and they were conscious about how many years of eligibility left guys had when they were recruiting them previously, because Auburn could have loaded up on, when Hugh Freeze arrives, Auburn could have loaded up on guys with 1 year of eligibility left for the 2023 season. And maybe they would have been a little bit better. Like, maybe they could have found guys that were a little bit better with just the 1 year of eligibility left. But what happens when all those guys are gone and you're replacing them after the 2023 season? Do you go get new transfers and replace them do you ask all your young players to step up? It's so crucial. Like, how many guys on this team are veteran additions to the transfer portal that didn't just have the 1 year of eligibility remaining, had multiple years, and therefore that's why Auburn only has, well, there's only four or five. I mean, how many new transfers are starting for Auburn this year? Like, how many, like,
that aren't 1 year guys?
Yeah, no, like, no, no, no. Newly arrived transfers are going to start for Auburn.
We will see if Percy Lewis gets the start. Keandre Lambert Smith will.
Robert Lewis will.
So you've got two or three on offense. Defense, you're going to have probably
Rakes,
Isaiah Rakes.
Bleedy.
Phillip Bleedy.
Probably Bug Thompson.
That's right.
Is that it?
Depending on their lineup, Dory Mousey may start.
Mousey may, but, I mean, that depends on Austin Key's health.
Yep.
So three or four. Two or three on offense, three or four on defense.
Right. And as opposed to a year ago when you were looking at you know, probably what 17 or 18 starters who are newly arrived from the transfer portal. And if so many of those guys, if those 17 or 18, if those guys had been 1 year of eligibility left remain, like then Auburn would have to, they'd have a big hole in them. And instead you've got a bunch of, you were able to retain a lot of last year's transfer portal class,
right,
and just sort of supplement with the transfer portal.
Yeah, let's look at second year transfer guys that Auburn has.
They're all over the depth. Yeah.
Peyton Thorne, Rivaldo,
Dylan Wade,
Tutal Miller. So there's four on offense. On defense, Eugene,
J-Mac,
Jalen McLeod,
Keys.
Austin Keys.
Eugene had been here 3 years.
Yeah, but I'm talking multiple year transfers, though. So you've already got more second-year guys than or multi-year guys than you do 1 year
players. If Tutal counts, so does Champ, right? I mean, JUCO
edition. Absolutely.
And Champ Anthony's there too. I mean, it's pretty shocking. And no, I just think that's it's proof of a strategy playing out. It's not Hugh Freeze.
You would hope that every year the number dwindles as far as having to get 1 year starters.
If I remember correctly, Auburn had to go into the portal a lot in Harsin's second year to sort of offset the players who had left after year one.
Yeah.
And that puts you on that treadmill where you're constantly having to go to the portal a lot to replenish the roster. And you know, I as you've pointed out, Brian, some of the very best, I mean, you can get really good players in the transfer portal, but a lot of the very best players you need to land out of high school. You need to land those guys out of high school, and you need to get most, if not all, of their college careers.
If you want to compete with Georgia, LSU, Alabama, Ohio State, et cetera, that's how you have to do it.
And to see Auburn less reliant on the transfer portal in Hugh Freeze's second year, and you would think, depending on how things shake out this year, maybe even less reliant next year, although they might have to find a quarterback. But
yeah. Well, I mean, when you've got 30 seniors, like we said this year, you're gonna need to go get some of those spots. And we still are waiting for an answer to, you know, how big the roster is going to be and how many scholarships we're going to have for next year.
Don't know that
while
yet.
You're trying to recruit that class. Yep.
There were positions when Hugh Freeze arrived where you would say Auburn lacks a guy who really projects as an SEC, like a quality, high-level SEC starter. And I don't know if necessarily that's the case now, where it's like, yeah, he might be reliant on the portal. He might have to be less reliant on them. But I feel like even if you look at the reserves, like based on how he's recruited these last 2 years, there are spots where, I mean, outside of quarterback, I don't know a spot where there's going to be like a glaring need for Auburn to, oh, you better go into the portal and find, like, I feel like they've recruited well enough.
Yeah,
that
I think you're right
they think they've got a starter or someone who could compete to be a starter. Maybe on the O line they might want to go find a veteran, but
need to find a veteran on the O line and on the D line next year, just because you got so many seniors on the D line.
But I think they like
you got a lot of good youngsters, but I mean I think you would still, if you get an impact interior defensive lineman,
also may look for a veteran cornerback that can, you know, play corner or nickel or, you know,
because Keontae's gone after this year.
Yep. Sure, but it's not as though the entire roster is being turned over every year because you're super reliant on seniors that joined your team for a year and then they're leaving via the portal.
All right, we will get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in the final 20 minutes or so when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Well, there went the idea of, you know, recording what we do in the breaks and putting it out there. I mean, with the three of us singing during the break, that probably ended that thought.
I'm just glad it still works. All the equipment's okay.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. I've got to say this now. I can't help it, but I do like to sing along when I'm at concerts and things like that. And usually the music's pretty loud.
Yeah.
There was a lady in front of us the other night that, I mean, she turned and smiled one time. I mean, it was like when Earth, Wind & Fire was playing. I did a little. I did a yow when it was time for one. And they didn't do it. She turned and smiled. But a little later, she said, she turned. I mean, as everybody seemed to be singing along when you know Chicago and Eric Wonderfire were playing. I don't remember which song, but she turned around and went, "You really have a good singing."
Oh, look at you!
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, it was a long time
drive
ago.
Listener.
Long time ago when I was a little band, but that sort of I'm segueing into Brian's Monday musings because he always has a musical musing as well. So first hit us. What was your musical musing today?
52 years ago, Looking Glass had their only number one, and really the only top 30 hit ever.
It was a huge one, though.
Brandy, You're a Fine Girl, rose number one. Stayed there for a week, and I think it was on the charts for, I don't know, around 30 or 40 weeks.
For a long time.
But it's still a song that is a staple of classic rock stations today, you know, 50-plus years later.
Yeah, that's cool. I was saying that I was trying to guess. That's usually one of the first things I read. I was out running around and didn't have a chance to see that. So I always look forward to your musings, your musical musings. I mean, because I've been a DJ for a lot of the songs that you
play. And part of being a great DJ is to be able to communicate little tidbits, right? It's not just putting on songs and playing them over. You want to, you know.
Well, it was great. Back in the day, I mean, it would be like album liners. You know, you'd read the liners on the back of the album and pass along little tidbits and things like that. So
educated, buddy.
That is always good.
I want to mention that Monday Musing, sponsored by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce,
absolutely.
Available statewide, surrounding states at Publix, Piggly Wiggly's, Renfro's. Delicious salsa. Just try it one time, you'll love it. Just here in Auburn, you can also get it at the Kroger's. I saw it just the other day. They got a big basket full of it on one of the aisles there by the chips. And you can also order online and get 15% off by using the discount code BMAT15.
That is excellent. We highly recommend.
It is very good,
Uncle Keith's. All right. So, what were the regular musings on? I mean, here game week, I would assume.
Well, I talked a lot about some of the things we talked about today about how this is the most, and the word I use was consequential season that Auburn's had in 30 plus years. And I said that it's not because Auburn is primed for a championship run this year; it's because this staff under Hugh Freeze are in the midst of building a championship program. And, of course, I went back and talked about what happened at Florida last year and how Auburn is in almost an identical position that Florida and Billy Napier were
in. Yeah, Florida expected to make that step last year. They did not.
And then their top five class fell apart right in front of their eyes over just a few weeks. And now you look at their class for 2025, and it's 47th, I think, in the country last time I checked. So it's vitally important that Auburn has a good year on the field, and everybody comes out of this season feeling confident about Hugh Freeze and his program.
Right. There needs to be some proof that is shown on the field.
Yes. And if they can do this, it's just there. It's there for the taking, right? You feel like that the next year, even though you got to figure out things at quarterback, you're going to put out a really talented team on the field. And the year after that, it's going to be even more talented and so on.
Speaking of quarterback, Deuce Knight expected to be in town this week for the A&M game.
Could have something from him in the next several days. We'll see. Could be before he visits. Could be during a visit. Could be after. Could be whenever. No set date there, but definitely one to watch closely, and definitely a top quarterback in the 25 class that I think Auburn has recruited really hard and is in pretty good shape for right now.
And Notre Dame fans are more than a little nervous.
They should be.
They're not extremely happy with what's been going on with Deuce.
Tough. Auburn recruits.
They've got
really
other
hard.
Things to be concerned about. We were talking about that a little earlier. I think that could be a really interesting ball game.
That's another hot
Saturday night
spot, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe he's not going to get fired with a tough year. I don't know, but that's another program that you just keep an eye on. I would guess. What would say? Yeah, but I don't think Nate Marshall he committed last week, right? He committed late last week, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I don't think I was here when it happened.
No. And then I missed a little.
It was like on Friday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Right. But yeah, that's an incredible flip, right? You're talking about the number one defensive end in the country from Illinois.
From Illinois, from Big Ten country.
And Auburn flipping him from the defending national champion who's been committed to for a good while now.
Yeah.
So that just tells you.
Well,
the
I mean,
power
everyone now. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, nobody can talk about recruiting without talking about Auburn and the run that Auburn has been on here over the summer.
Yep, and the only thing this class doesn't have right now is a quarterback, and that could change within days. Mm-hmm. And then they can just pile up some other areas. They need another couple wide receivers. They need an offensive tackle. They would love one more offensive tackle and the best available, I'm sure. And then we'll see what the rosters are set at for the future. If they're expanded, 105 could be a possibility. I don't think they'll be that high, but if they are expanded, Auburn doesn't have to stop now. They can keep adding players, right?
Right. Yeah, and again,
you don't want to have too many because those freshmen will leave if they don't play.
Right. It would be wild if you had a class of 40 freshmen.
Right. Probably not going to happen.
Yeah, wouldn't be able to retain those guys for terribly long. I don't know, Brian. What are you hearing? I mean, I've heard more lately talk about, all right, if it's 105, the SEC may cut it off at around the 90, 95 mark, which is what it was years ago.
The coaches went away from 95 to 85, thought it was
the end of college football.
Yep, it was over.
We're not going to be able to we're not going to be able to continue.
Yeah. But yeah, I could see that happening, which would allow you to take more players. Although I think some schools, especially schools that recruit at a high level, might be looking to add more upside players. Mm-hmm. Right, because if you sign a bunch of Rivals 100 type players, and again they'll try to sign as many as they can, but you know what I'm saying. If you get too many great players, the ones that don't play are going to leave.
Sure.
So you want to balance it out. Have your class of great players, but also maybe take some risk on some guys that are 6'5", 235, but you think in a few years.
It'll be really interesting. All right, we will get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar as we continue with the Monday Drive.
Yellowwood knows that
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Monday. Final segment, Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And let's get back to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And John is next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Had a quick question for y'all. I always heard it said that at small schools like a Troy or South Alabama, if you were a recruiting director, let's say it's a wide receiver, if they were going to miss on a prospect, they'd miss with a big guy receiver. So they'd go for a 6'3 guy before they would a 5'9 guy if they were iffy on the last couple receivers on their roster. If these rosters expand to 90, 105, do you see the larger, like, SEC schools kind of taking gambles on smaller players? Because you have, like, a lot of the small slot guys in the NFL who come out of really small schools.
Yeah, you know, I've never really thought about it as far as size. I do think if the scholarships expand, and they're going to expand, we just don't know how many, that's going to hurt schools like Troy and UAB and South, Brian. I think they're going to get some of the players that they didn't have room for that would go to those schools. But have you ever thought about the size of the players that they're going after? I mean, you said something about players that might fill out.
Right. Maybe players that don't fit the natural, like we want every defensive lineman we sign to be 6'5 and whatever. Maybe there's this guy that's super athletic that's 6'1. Or,
yeah, maybe
like
the next
receiver.
Dwight Freeney.
Right.
You know, sure.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, and sorry for the interruption. The gist of the argument was that if you're a scouting director, you don't want to be second guessed 2 years later and say, oh, you passed the 6'4 guy who turned out to be a stud.
Right.
And you got the 5'9 skinny guy. So when they had to make a decision, they would miss high.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I never really thought about it in that way. But it's going to be really interesting to see because the numbers are going to change. And there's going to be some trickle down, no question.
All right, thank you, guys.
Appreciate the call, John. Got a couple of minutes left here on the Monday Drive.
So, Brian, this is a game week show. What are you thinking for Saturday night?
Oh, score-wise?
I mean, score-wise, but also just sort of like, what do you think we're going to be talking about, you know, after Saturday's game?
I think Auburn could score in the 60s, and I think they'll pitch a shutout. What we'll be talking about, I hope we're talking about, you know, for Auburn's sake, about all the big plays that Auburn's offense produced. That's the biggest thing that needs to happen.
They need to, but Brian, I wonder how much do you do here in the first game? If you can run it and you're ripping off big gains running the ball, I still want to take some deep shots.
Yeah, you got to. Plus, you know, when you're running the RPOs, you know, depending on what the defense shows you, you may just
defense
keep tossing
comes up
it.
For the run, then yeah.
How I would be okay with limiting how much you want Peyton running it in a game like this.
I think that's something, Dan, I think that's worth talking about. I don't know that we've got a lot of time now, but I think a lot of people think when they hear RPO and they've seen Peyton run the ball, that means Peyton's going to run the ball. RPO doesn't necessarily mean the quarterback's running the ball.
Well, it's the way, you know, hearing Malzahn simplify it one time when he was talking about Nick Marshall and how it's basically the quarterback, you know, you have the decision to give or keep, and then if you make the decision to keep, you're making the decision whether to keep and run or keep and throw to the receiver. So it's almost like the quarterback makes a decision, and if he makes the decision to keep the ball after making that initial decision, then he's got a second decision to make, and then after that the play has sort of mm-hmm. been executed. You know, and yes, that can lead to a quarterback running it himself, but it can also lead to a quarterback using that mobility to get slot receivers and I keep thinking Rivaldo Fairweather is the guy who really benefits from showing block for a second or two on an RPO and then getting the ball.
Once Keandre Lambert-Smith and Robert Lewis and Cam Coleman and company stretch the defense. I mean, I think still early on some teams are going to go, okay, let's see if you can beat us. And that, Brian, is what could lead to some fun early, some big plays in the passing game.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've heard so much about Cam Coleman every single practice. We've seen mm-hmm. Perry and Malcolm and Bryce and
Sam,
all these other guys.
I like what we've seen from Sam Jackson.
So I just think it's important for the Auburn fan base, for the confidence of the offense, for Peyton Thorne, everybody involved in the offense to stretch things out, to get some big plays, to feel more confident about the passing game.
Here's something for the longtime Auburn fans, this, you know, the hope would be that it's something akin to a little over a half century ago when Auburn had been that just grind it kind of team, and then Pat Sullivan and Terry Beasley came along.
Yeah.
I mean, because you knew that like the first play or two of the ball game, there's going to be a deep pass. Whether it was complete or not, the crowd would go crazy just because you were trying something like that. And that's I just want to see some deep shots.
Well, and Auburn, if you remember, opened the Chizik and Malzahn era with some deep shots. Mm-hmm. Chris Todd that year, who had been the starter for some of the previous season. You know, Chris Todd gets another season with Auburn, and he's throwing deep balls in the Louisiana Tech game, the Mississippi State game, like Auburn. The West Virginia game, the rain game. Like, you know, Auburn started out pretty hot that year before they ran into some teams that just had a lot more talent, but no, I think when you got the weapons to do it, you know, give it a shot. And it sounds like Auburn maybe has a, you know, I'd love to see Cam or Perry or Bryce or Malcolm in the open field.
I want to see them all.
Want to see them all in the open field on Saturday night.
I'm looking forward to it. Brian, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you and everybody does there at Auburn Sports.
Plenty more coverage coming. I also had a bunch of updates today from you, Freeze, but plenty more coming all this week on football and recruiting and other sports at auburnsports.com. You can follow me on Twitter, /X, and Threads at BMATAU.
And we will have the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, on with us tomorrow. Don't forget, next on Wings 94.3, it's Tiger Talk. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.